Good grief. Question everything.
Welcome. You're listening to Why, a Good Grief Network podcast with Amy Lewis Rowe and Laura Schmidt. Thanks for listening to another episode of Why, a Good Grief Network podcast.
So we've had a really wonderful past couple of weeks where we've traveled over 3,000 miles and gone through 7 states. And the first part that we experienced was dropping you off for your vision fast. And granted, I did my own thing while you were starving yourself in the wilderness. But for this particular podcast, what I really want to do is dig into the second half of the week. This is where we traveled from northern Utah down to Albuquerque, New Mexico for a climate conference, the Uplift Climate Conference, to be more specific. Let's talk about Uplift for a second. This was not our first time at Uplift. We actually presented when Good Grief first started 2 years ago at Uplift in Durango. And the format of Uplift is really phenomenal. So what they do is they book out an entire campground for a weekend, and the entire conference takes place at that campground. So you can camp anywhere you want around, and then they just try to have the conference spread out. They offer multiple things at one time, so you can go to different workshops, you can network with different people, they supply all of your food. They usually have something every night that you can go to and meet people at. We applied to offer a workshop, a Good Grief Network workshop at Uplift, and it was accepted. Amy was feeling a little insecure because she knew she was going to be coming right off of the Vision Fast and we were going to have to go right into this conference. I feel like she did pretty well.
Thank you. I hope so. I hope so. I was still kind of in that dream headspace.
Yeah, but Uplift Climate Conference is targeting youth ages 30 and below, just trying to fire them up, I would say radicalize them a little bit, and in addition to that, help funnel their energy in really productive and progressive ways. The Uplift organizers want to have a way to engage these youth and tell them that there are other people working on these things and that their passion matters and there's a place for them, you know, amongst the activist crowd.
It was amazing to see such heartfelt folks of different ages coming together and sharing their experiences. I loved how on everybody's name tag, you had their preferred gender, pronoun. It was just an inviting, diverse, home-like space.
Yeah, where everybody treated everybody else with respect, you know, and people are just open and loving and not only wanting to receive knowledge, but inspiration. The Uplift Climate Conference is a wonderful place for me and Amy to network, especially since we've been living in Scottsbluff, Nebraska, and it's such a small community, and there's not too many real discussions about the state of the world happening here. So it was a breath of fresh air for me, especially having not done the Vision Fast.
Well, and we talked about how at Uplift, you're at a different baseline, and so I don't like small talk, especially, and that makes me sound like a grump. I like small talk sometimes, but I prefer to avoid it when I can. I mean, it's obviously a necessary tool for getting to know new people, to making people feel welcome, etc. So I believe all that's very important. But I had just come off my Vision Fast, so my energy was low, and I was blown away at how little small talk happened, even when we were meeting all of these new people, how it quickly was a different baseline of you could just trust that this person also is heart-centered and living in this world that is not kind.
To everyone, yeah.
To everyone, and that you didn't have to sit there and say, well, do you believe in climate change? Do you believe in equality? Do you believe, because you already knew that's why they were there. A lot of people drove and or flew a long distance to be there. It's because they believe in those things that put them there. And so you're operating at a completely different baseline than you are in everyday society, which allows you to develop deeper connections with these individuals. And so I don't know about you, Laura, but the few people I met, I don't know that we'll keep in touch. And at the same time, I feel closer to them than I do with many acquaintances because we had heartfelt, meaningful discussions.
Yeah. Well, and it's a really concentrated time for you to go and focus on issues that are meaningful for you and get new ideas and pass on your ideas. You know, it's a ripe playground for Amy and I. We were presenting Saturday. The conference started Friday. We had a wonderful reporter come down from New York City to cover the workshop that Amy and I were providing. What ended up happening went better than I could have envisioned. We had a group of 17, including me and Amy. Amy and I co-facilitated. We had a little bit of writing prompts, some time for open sharing. Amy led us through a meditation and some yoga moves. And at the end of the workshop, my takeaway was that people are looking for ways to build their own personal resilience so that we can continue to do hard things. We see that there are many problems. We're awake to the fact that there are many problems, and we're told several times a day how big the problems are that are facing us. And for our workshop, Amy and I were able to sink down to the level that says, we know there are problems too, we see them, and we want you to keep being the best version of yourself and the most sustainable version of yourself so that you can keep doing good work. And we're going to help you do this in a number of ways. And so we have different tools that you can use to sustain yourself and to sustain your effort. What do you have to say about our workshop and how it went? And
I think it went really well. And for me, there's been a shift that has happened since I went to school for yoga. And that is that I've realized there are different types of knowing. And when I come from a place of knowing that is purely head or brain related, I get anxious, I mess up. But when I trust my body's knowledge and I trust that I know, basically, I guess I had the realization that anxiety doesn't serve me when I'm preparing for these things, and that it actually hinders my performance. And so if I can relax, breathe deep, and the key fact here is that I need to be presenting on something I love and believe in, which I do with good grief, that I can naturally, when I'm relaxed, present in a manner that is accessible and that I can be proud of. And so I'm trying to learn to trust that rather than come from the place of over-planning that I used to come from. I'm trying to trust the process. I'm trying to trust that I know this stuff. I know these resources. I know self-work personally in my body. And to trust that. And that when I relax into a flow state, it goes well. And yet there's still part of me that's terrified to trust that. So the presentation for me was a good reminder that I'm on the right path and to trust my gut. I did just that. I think it went great. It can, like you said, it went better than we could have imagined. The folks that showed up, and a lot of that is the folks that showed up. They showed up with their whole hearts. They participated. They shared journal prompts about difficult topics. If they'd been silent the whole time, it would have been a whole nother ball game. But I think we created a space that people felt safe to share. I think Uplift helped create a space where people felt safe to share. And that combination mixed with our being fully present while we led this group through exercises, I think that's what made all the difference. And I think that's where the magic happens that we can't take full credit for.
Well, and now we have 15 other people who know some techniques to tap into resilience and to strengthen their resilience. And for me, that's one of the most important things is that we need a truly grassroots movement. And that grassroots movement has to be about waking people up at the core, about opening hearts and not just minds. Our minds are part of the problem. We have allowed this idea that we're rational creatures and science is the only way to know things dominate for too long, and we have to change that paradigm. And I think Uplift does a great job of saying there are other ways to know. What do your guts and hearts tell you? How can we sustain people at this level and encourage them to be the most open-hearted, even though it's painful? I mean, being open-hearted is incredibly painful and tough. And those of us who have certain sensitivities to what's happening to the world know that already. And we're looking to you to figure out ways to sustain yourselves so that we can all continue to build a truly just and sustainable world that we all want to live in. Maybe not the rich 1%. They probably don't want to live in that world because then that means they don't get to continue to exploit and dominate all decisions. But that's a different topic. I wanted to add that, you know, in the past month, we've been hit up by 3 or 4 different reporters all asking about grief and climate grief and systemic grief. And for us, that's incredibly validating that we're on the right path and that we're doing something that people want and need. The other day, we were applying for a grant, and I asked Amy a question about what makes our program unique. And Amy had a wonderful analogy.
So I considered us a bit like mashup artist. And so for those of you who are unfamiliar with mashups, mashup is when a DJ makes a song out of many songs that already exist. And the really fun ones get super eclectic. So we're talking Ludacris mixed with the Beach Boys or...
Is that real?
Yeah, that's a specific example to a girl talk song called In Step. It's actually one that I recommend because it has such a eclectic mix in it of songs. And the thing here's the thing about mashups, because some people love them and some people hate them. But the people who hate them tend to think that they're somehow trying to replace or be better than the original songs. And that's not what the mashup is about. The mashup takes the best of different songs to make its own art form. It does not replace the need for the original song because the original song has its own purpose and beauty, and that's wonderful. It's a different art form with different media. You have to think about it as its own entity as opposed to trying to compare it to these original songs that it's using to make its own art. And so what I like to do is say, okay, they mashed up these different songs. What kind of a feeling is this overall? And so I think our group is a bit like a mashup artist because we mash up the best from other groups. We make it accessible. You hear a lot in a short time. And then you can pick your favorite parts from the mashup and say, oh, that's a really great melody. I want to check out the original song. And it will introduce you to songs maybe you might not otherwise hear because we are consuming such a variety of resources.
And so, yeah, our group is novel and nuanced because we take the best of the best from many disciplines, not just one discipline. Amy and I have studied a lot and for a long time, and as we've mentioned many times, we think a lot. And so we're always watching documentaries. We're always reading. We've taken several classes, even outside of school. Like, I've signed up for many classes digitally because we want to keep learning. And the more we learn, the more we put patterns together and create digestible materials for everyday people who want to make the world a better place. And I loved your analogy with a mashup. I feel like that's really appropriate for what we do and what we're trying to do. We're standing on the shoulders of giants. You know, while we might have novel ideas and nuanced ways of looking at things, I mean, ultimately, we wouldn't be where we are without people like Joanna Macy or Terry Tempest Williams, Margaret Wheatley, Thomas Berry,
Patricia Smith,
Marie Howe,
Roxane Gay.
Well, and what's amazing is I just noticed that most of the people we just mentioned are women.
Yeah.
And not men. I mean, I've also read Derek Jensen and a bunch of other people, but the idea
Terrence Hayes.
The idea is that
we can talk about some powerful men who've influenced us as well.
But we do talk about men enough.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It's nice to get information from someone who's not living in the dominant paradigm. And I read some Gary Snyder on my Vision Fast a little bit, and he had brilliant things to say. And so it's really about whatever speaks to you. But I believe in having a diverse reading list.
Well, and I think that what we try to do is really assess the truth of the material we're digging into and then figure out what that truth is and package it in a way that we can disperse it to other people. We really run off inspiration, I'd say. And the inspiration is not gendered. You know, inspiration just comes without any sort of notion of patriarchy or power dynamics. And when we can visit a real fundamental truth and share that, I think that the Good Grief Network has been successful in our mission. Another thing I wanted to talk about is a question that the reporter who flew down to Albuquerque asked us. And it was after our workshop. And he said the workshop was on climate resilience or climate change resilience or climate grief, and you ladies didn't mention climate once. I didn't really think about it in our planning session, and I think I want to answer that on this podcast episode. So how did you answer that question when Avi asked you that same thing?
I talked a little bit about the word climate change. It's something that makes me a little uncomfortable, and it mostly has to do with people's ideas about it. And so I'm fine using the word in conversation, but in sort of a public venue, it's such a loaded word. I wouldn't want it to turn away folks who might benefit from our program because they are currently bogged down by other systemic problems where they don't have time to think about climate change. So my activism has been human rights-based and rather human-centric, but it's not that I think humans are above other animals. In fact, I think we are animals. I think the difference is that it's a lot to ask of a human being who is in the midst of suffering and trying to survive day to day to worry about an issue that they can't yet see in their community. And so to be more inclusive, it's not a word I'm using all the time, and yet our roots are in climate grief. So anyone who's been following us or climate grief is already something that resonates with them, I hope that they know we're talking to them and that this is for them. But I try not to use that word repeatedly in order to invite others who might not identify with that term to still think about what we're saying, because it applies to other areas of systemic grief.
Which is why sometimes we use the term collective grief.
Correct. I'm just letting everyone know why I'm uncomfortable with using that word so frequently to describe the work we do. It feels incomplete. It feels like it does not give them a full view of the work we're doing. That being said, as Avi pointed out, people who understand the layers and the depth of what this climate change means for the Earth, for the species on it, and especially for humans, people who understand the layers that are going to come with that, I have no problem talking about climate grief with them. It seems very normal and natural and an accurate way to describe what we're doing. But I guess I feel like the general population is so misled about this word, climate change, that it feels like a misrepresentation or just the tip of the iceberg of the work we're doing.
Well, and I do use the term climate change grief, and I think it's because in addition to what we will be grieving now with everything Amy's mentioned, basic human rights, scarce resources, things of that nature, worsening storms. So we're going to see a lot of chaos. But in addition to that, I think that we need to create some space to grieve our ideal imagined future that each of us had in mind from our youth. Whether we were promised the American dream, if we just work hard enough, we're going to get the two-car garage, white picket fence, boat in the yard, camper. I feel that Amy and I also didn't use the terms climate change at Uplift Climate Conference because everyone who was coming to our workshop on resilience already knew about climate change and was already impacted by climate change. So instead of focusing on climate, we were focusing on tools to build resilience and tools to build community. And those end up being universal. Moving through difficult emotions and building community look the same whether you're working on issues of racism or sexism or anything like that. They become humanitarian issues, or they become systemic issues, as we keep using this word, and it's because they all stem from the same root. All of these problems exist because of a disconnection from ourselves and from others and from the natural world. And so the tools that we're trying to put into the world and the techniques that we're using all contribute to healing. And healing, whether it's healing the grief caused by climate or healing the grief caused because we're assholes to each other, I mean, that ultimately feels the same. And finally, for part of our workshop at the Uplift Climate Conference, we asked a series of journal prompts, and I wanted to read them here for you just in case you wanted to reflect on them as well. So question one, what unique skills do you possess? Two, what makes you feel alive and inspired? Three, how do you practice vulnerability? Four, what emotions arise when you're crying? Five, if you knew you couldn't fail, what would you most want to do for the healing of the world? And six, what resources, inner and outer, do you have that could help number five come to life? We've found that journal prompts are a good way to enter into sharing with your community and just exploring yourself and your answers. Some of your answers might surprise you. So I would encourage you to listen to those questions and write them down if you feel moved and find an answer. Find all the answers.
Special thanks to each and every one of our patrons, especially our new ones, Emily, Brendel, and Jen. Thanks to Dick and the Meyer family. And a special thanks to Mary for always supporting us and having our back.
Thank you for listening to Why, a Good Grief Network podcast, with your hosts, Amy Lewis-Rowe and Laura Schmidt. If you like what you hear, consider subscribing, commenting, leaving feedback, or just checking out our Patreon page. We'll come back at you next week with some more information and some more big questions. Thank you for listening.